Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business, as we go inside the game of football and talk about the business aspects of the game. Last night was the first round of the 2016 NFL Draft, where, as always, we have a lot of different scenarios that play out, a lot of shockers, you know, and some things we've never seen before. And I got, as always, Neil Stratton here to, you know, as we'll break it all down here today in today's show. How's it going, Neil?
Doing great. Interesting first round, that's for sure.
That is for sure. So we wanted to talk about some winners and losers last night and kind of the different things that went on there in Chicago down by Grant Park. Speakingly, you know, I think we start out with Laremy Tunsil, and you know, it's kind of a shocker. A lot of people thought he would have been the first overall pick, and then drops down to the 13th overall pick by the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, again, that video, you know, popped up on his Twitter account there in regards to looks like, you know, him in a gas mask smoking marijuana, and then he did admit that was him, but it was a number of years ago. But 5 minutes before the draft, you know, popped up on there. Somebody said he had got hacked by his, you know, his Twitter account had gotten hacked. You know, earlier this week there was a lawsuit brought upon him about his former stepfather that stemmed from this summer's event in regards to where he was riding around supposedly with an agent or financial advisor, and him and his stepfather got into a physical altercation. A guy who was supposed to be possibly been the number one overall pick when the Titans held that pick and dropped all the way down, and we talked about guaranteed money, probably went from $25 million guaranteed to about $8 million, you know, guaranteed, you know, when we're talking about real dollars there. You know, different situation for sure, something that you and I, you know, hadn't seen there. So kind of, you know, give me your thoughts on that and, you know, how we saw this. Is there somebody that could have been a culprit, you know, different things like that. So, I mean, I think that's an interesting thing, because obviously it's something that was posted. It was on there. You know, it's not just rumors. Everybody saw it. ESPN and NFL Network had the picture and the video that kind of, you know, correlated to this event. So, you know, I guess that's where we'll start here this morning.
Well, there's also, Justin, I know you saw the Instagram post that had the dialogue between Tunsil and an Ole Miss official essentially confirming that he was paid off by Ole Miss, and which he did not deny. It's amazing. I've never seen, and I don't think anyone has seen, a coordinated social media attack that undermined a player literally minutes before the draft and had apparently such an impact. I mean, I was a little bit out of it. I was had to run around with my kids and had some church stuff going on, and so I didn't catch the very beginning of the first round. And so I'm following as Tunsil's falling, and I'm thinking, what in the world happened? And then, you know, it all became pretty crystal clear once I got the facts of things. It seems pretty obvious to me that someone in Tunsil's inner circle got cut out of the loop pretty late in the game, and they wanted revenge. Now, who gets access to a player's social media handles? Because, you know, everyone, of course, the go-to excuse is that your account was hacked. Well, being hacked is different from someone else having your username and password and being able to use it to upload or whatever. And that seems to be what happened. To me, that seems to be the most obvious answer. If that's the case, the question you have to ask is, was it a marketing person? Was it a financial advisor that might have gotten cut out? He didn't make an agent change. Presume that there weren't none of his agent contenders that lost out would wait until minutes before the draft to do this, but I guess anything's possible. But it seems a lot more plausible that it was someone that he entrusted with his social media to handle that account. You know, someone is kind of ostensibly a PR person or marketing person or whatever you want to call it. Whoever that person is that pulled this off obviously had quite an agenda and made a bigger impact than I think anyone can imagine. But what's interesting to me is, I mean, for people that are listening to this podcast that didn't know, I hate to shatter your illusions. There are a lot of players in the NFL that smoke marijuana. You could argue that one of the few victories that the NFLPA got in the last CBA agreement was that they essentially removed a lot of the testing for marijuana and gave players more party time in the offseason, shall we say, unfettered by NFL accountability. And so I think that Tunzel would smoke marijuana, which unfortunately is becoming more and more seen as a whatever kind of thing by NFL teams as well as by society at large, doesn't seem like such a groundbreaking thing. Now, obviously, it'll get a lot of media play, and it's going to be on there forever. But in the final analysis, I'm not sure how much difference it makes. Now, the Instagram issue that involved the Ole Miss official, another incredibly awkward thing, but does it really affect how he plays on the field? And if you're talking about a guy that only a few weeks ago seemed like the most obvious choice to be the number one pick, and to see him fall to the Dolphins at 13, I don't know. I mean, I still think NFL teams get scared away by things that could look bad for them in the media, and ultimately this is what happened. I don't know that either of these really in a material way affect who Laremy Tunzel is as a player. Now, maybe there are more things out there that we didn't know about. But this seems to be, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it seems to be a duck. This seems to be a coordinated media account, social media account, media attack that really caused him to go from probably 3 to 13 and cost him, you know, as you alluded to, almost $20 million. So it definitely had its effect, and it's kind of a shame for Tunzel. Now, I guess the other thing that I ask, though, who films themselves smoking marijuana? I don't know. I mean, I guess there's a lot of questions you can ask, and we're still kind of developing this, and it's really still kind of a breaking story. But these are the things that are floating through my mind as we consider the first round from last night.
Yeah, definitely. From the standpoint of, you know, like you said, I mean, the marijuana has become legal in different states in regards to medical marijuana and different things like that, and we'll see where that goes. I think the standpoint of the teams not necessarily think that they care about the marijuana or the Instagram thing between the coaches, it was that they were blindsided by this. And that's what, you know, when they're going to go draft somebody, they don't want to be, the teams and stuff like that don't want to be blindsided, but they want to be able to have some type of response and know all the facts. I mean, many times when in regard to interviewing players, they ask the question, the scouts will ask the question when they're interviewing, but they already know the answer. And they just want to see if
sure.
the player is going to be truthful, you know, with them. And, like, you know, a kid. So I think that's where, you know, it wasn't necessarily the act. It was, hey, this is all going to pop 5 minutes before we as an organization in a multi-billion-dollar industry can't have egg on our face by not knowing that, hey, this video was out there, you know, or, hey, what it was and different things like that, and be able to not get, you know, Tunks on the phone to be able to him explain it. I think that's where, hey, if this video came out a week before the draft or even 3 days before the draft where each team could go back and you know, talk with him, you know, say, hey, when this happened, was this yesterday or was this, you know, was this 8 years ago, you know, or you know, when he was 17, that's what's coming out there. I think that's where it came there is they just didn't have enough time to react and to investigate the situation there, and that's why the guy went from, you know, and all accounts, when the quarterbacks had gotten traded up for 1 and 2, there, you know, the first landing spot was at number 3, and you know, going from 3 down to 13, you know, a 10 pick slot, obviously a lot of money. I think, you know, he'll be fine. He's a great football player, you know, and you know, I think he'll go up there and, you know, have a long NFL career. This will kind of be a blip on his radar. But the one thing, you know, when you're talking about that, is that's money you'll never be able to make. But again, if he mm-hmm. goes out and has a DeBrickashaw Ferguson type, you know, career there, you know, he'll you know, definitely make up for it and be fine there. The question is going to be, hey, just like some of the other, you know, like, you know, some of the other players and different things like that, hey, can they take the success or where they were drafted and then continue to build upon it and be that player? Or was, hey, was this the culmination, you know, of it? And that's why I talk with guys and different things like that is, you know, the NFL has busts, and it's busts not because these guys can't play. It's because either the guy had a goal to get drafted in the NFL, and so when they get drafted, the goal is over and done with, or the guy had a goal to play in the NFL, and then so when they get drafted, it's just the first step, you know. So I think that's where, you know, some of these busts we have, it's not because they weren't good players and different things like that. It's just their motivation, you know, kind of, you know, is what's in, you know, you can't measure. It's not a 40, you know, yard dash. It's, hey, was their goal to get drafted in the NFL or make it in the NFL? And those are two different things, you know, and takes a whole lot, you know, more extra work to make it in the NFL than to, you know, just to get drafted. So, you know, a ton of different things there. You know, Robert Condici, another, you know, Ole Miss kind of, you know, different type of personality, you know, didn't know where he was going to go, ended up getting drafted late, you know, today in the first round. We also saw Paxton Lynch, the Denver Broncos, popped up and got him. Kind of, you know, initially, what are kind of thoughts on, you know, different other, you know, winners and losers from last night's first round?
Well, let's take them one at a time. First of all, I got a man up and give you your props for winning the bet on Robert Incombici, Justin. I thought he might slide in the third round. He said no later than late second. We were both to some degree wrong. He didn't even make it out of the first round, despite having a off season that rivaled you know, the last 24 hours for Laremy Tunsil in bad news and issues that would make NFL teams kind of be scared off. Tunsil's got to be happy today. He, you know, sticks in the first round, and you know, he's still going to, you know, get paid, and that's good news considering all the different situations regarding, you know, again, the drug use and maybe you know, dropping dime on his teammate and all the other iffy moves that that he made in the last few weeks. And you know, he lands on his feet in Arizona, and it wasn't the first pick in the draft, but you know, at least he's he made it, stayed in the first round, and so where there's still the pretty good money. And so he's got to be happy. I, you know, again, you wonder what kind of background and diligence the Cardinals did to kind of make this determination that he was going to be a safe guy. But if there's one thing I've learned, is the ability trumps character. Everyone likes to talk about how much character is an important part of the game. And it's certainly part of the equation, but at the end of the day, if you have a guy that can be a real difference maker for you, you tend to forget about the character issue, and you go for the guy that could, you know, help you win. And I think that's the situation with Incombici. Paxton Lynch goes into probably as good a situation as he could possibly go to. I mean, the defending Super Bowl champions, they traded up to get him. He probably doesn't start coming right out of training camp, but stranger things have certainly happened. I think everyone agrees that Lynch is still not a guy that really gets it as far as the gravitas you have to have as a quarterback and the fact that you're leading a team and what have you. But a big win for him and certainly other teams. Apparently the Cowboys have admitted they tried to trade back in to get him. So he was obviously a man that was in demand, and so good for him. It's a big victory for Lee Steinberg, who kind of has his big comeback story. Now has a big cherry on top, and so you know, a lot of winners that come away from the Lynch story, and so you know, they've got to be happy there. And it'll be interesting to follow that story. Again, he's not there yet completely. He certainly didn't end the season with Memphis the way perhaps he wanted to. But that's all in the past now, and now everyone's focused on, you know, going to the Super Bowl champions and trying to make his way in with a team that's got a long legacy for great quarterback play with you know, with John Elway there. So yes, those are a couple more winners from the draft that really have to be happy with what happened last night.
Yeah, for sure. And like we had talked about some earlier shows, you know, rep one in regard with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz going 1-2, kind of like we expected after the Eagles had made that trade there. So definitely they, you know, as in, you know, an agency standpoint, you know, they were a big winner there, you know, which could have been some issues if one of those guys had slid. But obviously those guys go 1-2. And, you know, I think in regards to, you know, with Paxton Lynch situation, you know, I think he's a guy who, you know, was at Memphis, was at a small high school. I think he'll start to get it, you know, there in regards to, hey, how you have to kind of perceive and, you know, your persona, you know, there. You know, I think, mm-hmm. you know, not being at the big stage like a Pac-12, like a Jared Goff, you know, there. And I don't think the standpoint is, you know, people expected that of him. I mean, there was kind of the rumors that, hey, was he a little bit, you know, quirky and different things like that, his personality. But again, he's 6'7", he's big, he's strong, he's fast, and he could, you know, could be developed. And we were talking about, you know, I think that was one thing a lot of people thought in regards to why Paxton Lynch would have gone in the first round in regards to the five-year option. We're talking about first-round picks, you know, in regards to where mm-hmm. you can add that five-year option. That was one thing that was brought up, you know, in the NFL draft, is that if Brock Osweiler was drafted in the first round, the Denver Broncos still would have had controlled his rights this year and wouldn't have hit free agency. So all these guys that were mm-hmm. in the first round all have the, you know, the club option as the fifth year. They signed 4-year deals, but then the club has that fifth year option that kind of come and put it out there if they still want to control that. It's not, you know, getting to a long term deal before that fifth year option kind of kicks in. So I think that's when we're mm-hmm. talking about the teams in regards to those first rounds, which obviously we saw the San Francisco 49ers pop in, you know, again to the first round to take an offensive guard there. You know, so in regards to, you know, maybe why some of these people had done some of the moves that they did to be able to kick back in the first round, like you said, the Cowboys maybe had tried to get back up there to get Paxton Lynch to kind of groom for Tony Romo's replacement. So kind of, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked to, you know, in regards to winners and losers and different things like that. Anything else, you know, Neil, that kind of, you know, to you in your head going, why, you know, something happened last night, you know, something that you were besides different than Laremy Tunsils or, you know, Paxton Lynch and guys that we've talked about already?
Well, I thought one thing that was a little interesting, I don't know if you know necessarily call it winners, but short people, I guess, kind of won out last night. There were three picks that, you know, I think last year I kind of joked about it, that it seemed like length was the buzzword that everyone wanted to use during last year's draft broadcast. This year there are three players selected in the top 15 that are under 6 feet tall. And you know, one of them was the number 10 pick, the number 10 pick, Eli Apple from the Giants, along with Corey Coleman to the Browns at 15 and Carl Joseph to the Raiders at 14. In a league that is increasingly becoming a place for 6 feet, you know, 6 feet, under 6 feet players almost need not apply, I thought it was interesting that so many teams threw that out this year and went with a guy that they had kind of fallen in love with, even if they weren't quite as tall as maybe you'd like them to be. So that I thought was interesting. I don't know if I'm ready to call it a trend. I guess we'll find out more about that as we go through today, you know, the round today, and then finishing up things tomorrow. But I thought that was one interesting aspect of 2016 that we'll have to see if it carries forward in 2017 and 18 and beyond.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I've talked about in some of my videos and different things like that, and tried to educate the players that are coming out, whether they're guys I'm recruiting or just guys that, you know, I'm sending my blog to, in regards to that, that's medical. Medical is something that's huge, mm-hmm. and that I think players don't pay enough attention to, as well as the agents, you know, that's trying to recruit these guys and putting a lot of, you know, backing, you know, financially, you know, into some of these players. And that's in regards to, hey, if the doctors say you're off, that we're medically red flagging this player and he's off our draft board, or he's off, not, we're not taking him in the first round, or, you know, in regards to however they're going to place that player. Medically, again, you had talked about earlier, talent over trumps character, but medical mm-hmm. doesn't trump character, especially when we're talking about first rounds, especially when we're talking about top 10 picks. I mean, Miles Jack, if you looked at a lot of those mock drafts, number five to Jacksonville. I mean, some of those guys on NFL Network and ESPN, in regards to their original mock draft, oh, Miles Jackson is going to go top five. And then it was always 110 to the Giants, and that was kind of the farthest, then you saw, okay, maybe he was going to go to the Raiders, there. But, hey, he wasn't going out of the top 17 picks, even as far as 2 days ago when some of these guys did their final mock drafts. But the one thing that media and agents, most likely, they don't have access to the medical, scenarios. Last year we had, the running back, Jay Ajayi from the Miami Dolphins, who had slipped to the fifth round because of a medical. And that was something that happened as a freshman. So in regards to, we have Miles Jack, who's still on the board, went to the green room. We have Jalen Smith, who obviously didn't go to Chicago because of, hey, he kind of knew that he wasn't going to get drafted in the first round. So it'll be interesting to see where Miles Jack, goes and where Jalen Smith goes. Now, again, Miles Jack, if people are worried about, not that he won't play this year, but is he a second contract guy? Can they get him for more than 4 or 5 years? So I think in regards to, if we're talking about losers, per se, regards to a guy who thought he was going to go in the top five and down there, and it wasn't anything really to his fault. And I think that's where, with Tunsil and Robert Condici, I mean, those were kind of self-inflicted wounds. Or that with Miles Jack and Jalen Smith, you feel worse for those guys. At least personally, I do. It's like, man, they played and everything like that, and they just got hurt. It was just an unfortunate situation. So, I mean, that would be, to me, that's the biggest interesting thing coming into today. It's where does Miles Jack go? I mean, where does Jalen Smith go?
Well, I think Miles, you're right. I think that's probably the biggest story of day two. And who knows, we might even see some teams trading up to try to get Miles Jack as a super mega value pick early in the second round, but it's all going to go in their medical. I think, however, when it comes to Jack, the bigger issue is that I think within 72 hours before the draft, he was quoted as saying something along the lines of, well, anything over 3 years is gravy. I mean, it may not have been quite as drastic as that, but he conceded that microfracture surgery is a real possibility for him, and there's no certainty that he will make it to a second deal, as you alluded to. That is such a major admission, I think, by a player that was widely regarded as a top five player going into the draft. To hear a player say that he essentially admit that he has a suspect knee is hard. It's hard to over-exaggerate what kind of impact that had. And I think as much as the medical reports that every team had, it might have been that here's a kid who's essentially admitting that he's got problems and that the future is uncertain. And when you make that selection in the first round, you're looking at a guy, hopefully, in most cases, that steps in and starts for you for 4 years and hopefully 5 years. And with Miles Jack, we're not even sure he makes it to year four physically. So I think that was maybe, I don't know if I would go so far as to call it a self-inflicted wound, but it certainly didn't help him that he had apparently gone on the record and cast doubt on the health of his knee. We've got a player that was selected number one overall, I guess, 2 years ago, Jadeveon Clowney, who had a similar knee situation, and take it from a guy who lives in Houston, there is a tremendous amount of dissatisfaction, certainly among the fans, and I think it's fair to say among team officials, with how little he's played and what little impact he's made in the times that he has played due to that knee, at least partially due to that knee. So that's a big, big red flag in many ways, and we've seen the cost that it's had for Jack, and that's unfortunate, but it is part of the game. We've seen it with Jalen Smith as well. I think it's a little different for Smith. I think perhaps he hasn't come on and essentially said, oh, yeah, I've got a big knee problem, and who knows how it's going to affect me, but certainly it is a manifestation of what you said. The medical could be as important or more important than any other factor when it comes to evaluating these players. So I think we're starting to see it a little bit more. I think people are starting to recognize the importance of the medical, but it's still something that I think is a little undervalued, at least by people like fans that are kind of watching and paying attention, who aren't privy to that kind of information, but it certainly has a had a big has cast a major shadow in the first round this year.
Yeah, and with 5 minutes to go here, Neil, I just wanted to kind of get your quick comment. I know you had some, you know, friendships with former scouts of Cleveland Browns, and we talked a lot about this show, and I would feel remiss if we didn't mention the Cleveland Browns here on the podcast. So what were your thoughts? I mean, Cleveland obviously went from 2 down to 8, and then they, you know, traded down again last night when they're on the clock, you know, and took Corey Coleman, which I think is a nice piece. I don't know if he's a number one, you know, receiver there, and you know, but I think he's a guy who I think is a great number two and a stretch guy, and I thought Houston would have taken him. But what do you think about the Cleveland Browns and obviously Moneyball, you know, per se, and their analytics, you know, there and what they did in regards to the first round and gathering, you know, more assets, you know, in regards to draft picks?
Well, I think, you know, we've talked about the Browns in a negative light several times on this podcast. I think it's important to give them credit for being able to pull this off. Not every team can trade down regularly. And if you know that you don't necessarily have to stick at 8 to get your guy, or at least get a guy that will plug a hole that you need, then I think you give them, then you trade down and take whatever you can get. And I give the Browns a lot of credit for that. And I think that's a feather in Sacha Brown's hat. I guess the question is, what do you do with those? Ultimately, that's the bigger question, is what do you do with those picks and how do you make them stick and do they have the real impact that you want? I mean, ever because we live in the post-Herschel Walker world, and we saw all the success that the Cowboys had so many years ago when they made that deal, then everyone automatically thinks, oh, well, if you trade down, then you're going to win several Super Bowls. Not the case. It's not nearly that easy. And it's a lot more complicated than that. So we'll see what the Browns do with the picks. Corey Coleman, impact player, is he the answer? We'll see. They certainly had a need at wide receiver. There were a lot of good receivers out there, and you know, we'll see what they get from Coleman. He doesn't seem to have the size that you want from a number one receiver necessarily, but that's not so damning that obviously the two other teams didn't take guys that were under 6 feet tall themselves. So maybe that's a new trend that we're going to see, and maybe speed begins to trump size in the eyes of a lot of NFL teams. But again, just on the fact that they were able to trade down, they're able to add picks, a team that's got lots of holes and needs to add talent, I think you have to applaud them for that.
Yeah, definitely. And it'll be interesting to see what they do, not only today and tomorrow, but obviously next year, some of those picks. They have another first rounder next year, so 2 first round picks next year right now, and 2 second round picks next mm-hmm. year now. So obviously, I think Cleveland knows where they're at in a state of a franchise where it's not going to be where they're going to be able to win now, but it's going to be win in 3 years, and that will be, you know, something that, hey, if they can do it, everybody's going to be applauding them and saying, hey, great job. If they kind of blunder these draft picks over the next 2 years, people are going to be, you know, saying, hey, it's the same old Browns, just different ownership and things like that. So with about 90 seconds to go here, I just wanted to say, hey, what are you looking for here today? I think obviously Miles Jack is going to be a huge story, you know, in regards to him. And then I think to me, it's where these other quarterbacks go, the Connor Cooks and the Christian Hackenbergs, you know, of the draft, in regards to, hey, does Cleveland take one of those guys, you know, there to kind of help with the RG3 more of a bridge guy, or do they kind of, you know, continue to stick with their philosophy there? So that's what I'm looking for today is Connor Cook, Christian Hackenberg, and Miles Jack. What about you, Neil?
Those are huge storylines. You're right. I think the other storyline, I think, is the number of defensive tackles that are going to be available today. There are so many that, I mean, this is such a deep draft at that position that there'll be a lot of marquee players from marquee programs that show up on, in the draft, second round, that a lot of teams are going to be really happy with, a lot of fans are going to be happy with. The thing about the second round is, you know, these days you hear speculation on a guy going in the first round for about the top 50, 60 guys anyway. So everyone that's unhappy with the first round usually are very often happy with their second rounder and say, oh, hey, look what value I got. Well, you know, these are still impact players. They're going to be with teams for a long time. And so, yeah, that will be, it'll be interesting to see where those players go. Those quarterbacks, it'll be interesting, the defensive tackles, and of course, as we said 100 times in this last half hour, Miles Jack will be the player I think everyone's looking for to see how far he slides.
Well, Neil, it'll be fun watching this, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Can't wait, man. It'll be a lot of fun, and we'll talk to you soon.